If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold. You can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. And sometimes the shows write themselves. There's so much in the news that I just show up and go over the things that I've been reading about over the past weekend. Sometimes we're part of the news. Tyler's Reports had a big story of the last couple of days, and the fallout from that is instructive on what's going on in the gubernatorial race, the media landscape in general. So we'll get to all that. Rebecca Jones is back in the news with some breaking news this morning. You know, she was banned from Twitter, and there's the big brouhaha about that and how DeSantis is a hypocrite because he is celebrating her ban from Twitter. But there's a little bit more to the story, and so we'll dig into that a little bit. And also, there's new text messages accidentally revealed by the U.S. attorney here. They need someone new to deal with how they release information. Evidently, and Jeff Berlew did a good job of this, of monitoring the case, which is coming up for trial in July, on the local corruption, the J.T. Burnett trial. They evidently accidentally released a filing or a motion that had some text messages in there between the various parties that were close to this corruption scandal. Not all of them have been accused of any wrongdoing. But some interesting text messages, which we will talk a little bit about. Nothing, I would say, earth-shattering in the sense that, you know, people who have been accused or charged in corruption or pled guilty are saying corrupt things in text messages. But there is a couple different perspectives that I wanted to hit on, which we'll do in the next segment. We'll try to address that, the Nikki Fried issue, and Rebecca Jones in the next segment, and just spend a little bit of time on each. But they all are very interesting in the sense they say a lot about what media is doing, how things are being covered, and also they all have a slash corruption slash unethical angle to them. And so we'll deal with that. Bottom of the hour, we'll go over the Leon County Commission agenda. A little bit more information to provide there. They've got a meeting today that begins at 3 o'clock. Some interesting issues there. We talked about them before, but I've got a little bit more insight to provide, so we'll go through those issues one at a time, about four or five of them. Now, one of the things, if you've been following Talis Reports, you'll see some of the stories there, but the you know, one of them involves this crash on Meridian Road and an analysis there requested by, and I didn't know this last week, by Leon County Commissioner Brian Welch, District 4. Two child students were tragically killed, and so they're going to make some improvements there. We'll go over the analysis again that was provided. Also, there's the CSC will be on the agenda. The Anti-Defamation League, which we did a story on this, and this, so we'll go through this a little bit of detail again. This is a resolution against hate. Easy to be on the side against hate until you read the resolution, and it leaves out some things, puts some focus on other things, but that will be one of the more interesting things to see how the Leon County Commission deals with it, or if they deal with it at all and just pass it, don't even talk about it. Sometimes that happens. Now, they are passing a thing related to the budget, and there's a couple issues in there that we'll go over. And also, there'll be a public hearing, which will be the final time that we probably have to talk about the mask ordinance. So, you know, before, you can't just end an ordinance. You've got to notice a public hearing. And so this is the time that that's going to happen. And so the mask ordinance will be no more. Unless something major happens, but that is also on the agenda today. Now, we'll also get into, we'll give you a COVID update. There's been some major changes. If you've been looking for our weekly update in the city of Tallahassee or Leon County, the state is no longer updating the data on a daily basis. They've changed their format, which I actually like, and we'll get into the routine of reporting that, but they're giving now a weekly update for the state and all the counties. So we'll go over that, and we'll try to get that back up at Tallahassee Reports in terms of a consistent format that we can publish for the next couple of weeks until we, you know, until we see where these numbers are headed. But, you know, obviously that was governor came under some criticism for that, but I was wondering when that was going to happen. So this sort of puts an end to our daily coverage of the state, which we had been updating every day for a long time. We started backing off as the numbers have headed down, and it became less of an issue every, you know, 2 or 3 days. But I will tell you that that story, which we had up every day on our website, had over 1 million views over the period it was up. So that'll be sort of a wrap on that, which, you know, I'll never forget the beginning of the coverage of the COVID. Didn't know a lot about it, obviously, in the very beginning, and you know, the news media was running with it, and I was just like, well, this is going to go away in a couple of weeks. Well, when we finally buckled down and said, look, this is something that's going to have, you know, worldwide implications that really are going to hit here, right here at home, we put together, you know, this story that basically tracked these three metrics of cases with a trend, with the 7-day average trend, hospitalizations and deaths. And we've published it, you know, for over a year, like I said, with over 1 million views. And, you know, it was very informative in the sense that people could just look at it and get an idea of where things were headed. Didn't have to read. We just basically put in the descriptions of each chart and did not opinionate the numbers, did not editorialize the numbers, just let the readers see what was being reported. And then, you know, from locally here, it took us a little longer to get into a trend of, you know, the local numbers were tougher to report daily because you did not have some sense of what was going on. But we did get into the swing of giving the weekly updates with the 7-day averages, and those provided really good information. So anyway, that's sort of a wrap on those, and I don't know how much longer even the weekly reports will be up. Now, you understand that they could be up for a while because, you know, the Florida Department of Health, they provide these flu reports. They just don't get printed all the time. They provide flu reports, I think, something like 40 weeks out of the year. And so the COVID could go that way. The COVID-19 could go that way in terms of how they get reported. They could still be reported, but just slowly fall out of being, you know, newsworthy. So anyway, we'll get you up to date on those specific numbers. And then also, we'll go over the assignment of Leon County school principals. There was an announcement which, you know, this happens every summer or just before every summer when some principals are replaced or retire. And there was, looks like there was about 6 changes, which we'll go over. We got this story up yesterday early and very popular, as you can imagine, with 33,000 students and parents wanting to know who's going to be the principal at their school. And so that got a lot of traffic, but we'll run through each of those. One new high school principal, a couple of no new middle school principals. They remain the same, but a number of changes in elementary schools. So we'll get you caught up to date on those changes. That'll come back in the last segment. But when we get back, we're going to focus our attention on those big three that we talked about, the Maddox text messages, Nikki Fried's disclosures and sort of the fallout from that, and then the Rebecca Jones saga with Twitter and some announcement that she just made this morning. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen. The quality materials like granite quartz and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they do not mark up the cost of stone materials. The way they see it, since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround. from an honest local company. Give them a call at 765-2037, 765-2037. We appreciate their sponsorship here on Above the Fold. All right, we want to try to knock out a couple of big issues here. First, we'll turn to the Scott Maddox text messages. Jeff Berlew with the Tallahassee Democrat did a good job of getting the scoop on this story. The U.S. Attorney's Office here, I guess, accidentally released some information, and they were there to pick it up, and it involves some text messages between a host of characters involved with the corruption investigation here in Tallahassee. And so what I wanted to do is, you know, listen, like I said, the majority of this story is about people who are conniving and corrupt, or saying conniving and corrupt things in text messages. That's not the news here. The news is some of the people that are involved that knew some things that were going on that weren't indicted, and also a sort of a new angle from the marijuana perspective. The text messages show that Scott Maddox was a little bit more involved with representing a marijuana company out of Orlando. We don't know the name of them. This was around 2015, 2016, when the city commission, this was before the state had sort of usurped the power of regulating medical marijuana. And actually it was sort of a hodgepodge of local governments were doing the regulation. So it came before the city commission. And so that is one of the revelations that I think is interesting. The other one is the note that Kim Rivers is also involved in some of these text messages. Now, you know, to this point, a lot of the media coverage, when they talk about JT Burnett being involved with this and being indicted, that this does not have anything to do with Trulieve or his wife, Kim Rivers. But now you start to see some of the fringe, you know, some of these text messages show that Kim Rivers, who is the CEO of the, you know, this powerhouse medical marijuana company, Trulieve, was aware of some of these text messages and actually responded to a couple of them from Maddox. So it'll be interesting to see how much more they have on that. So again, this provides the angle of the marijuana part of this instead of just pay for play with city vendors. Now, why this is relevant is because, you know, the first Trulieve medical marijuana distributor was here in Tallahassee, and the city of Tallahassee did vote on some laws and some ordinances that were provided Trulieve with a little bit of distance, a head start, in the sense that it kept other people from getting into the business. So be interesting to see where that all goes. Now, the other part of this, which I think there's another story coming out from based on what Mr. Berlew had written. And if you look at his first story, you can sort of tell what the next story is going to be about, because some of the names that he mentioned of being involved in these text messages are not detailed in the body of the story. And two of those names are Drew Jones and Sean Pittman. Drew Jones, who is a political consultant slash lobbyist slash, I don't know, political consultant and lobbyist, I guess, pretty much defines what Drew does, very good at what he does. And he has had contracts with the city and the county. He's worked on a lot of campaigns through a business. Now, it'll be interesting to see what they have between him and some of these other characters. And then the other name is Sean Pittman, who is basically the same type of operative, political consultant. He's a lawyer. He's a lobbyist. And so, it'll, again, be interesting to see the text messages that are related to him. Now, both of these gentlemen have been, and this goes back to also Kim Rivers, none of them have been accused of any wrongdoing. And, you know, there is, as we've talked about on this show, you know, there's not this gray area anymore. It's you're either indicted and you're tried, or what you're doing is really just everybody looks the other way. There's none of this, look, this isn't ethical, or it doesn't look right, you shouldn't be doing this. So, I mean, I think what you're going to see, I think, in these text messages are, you know, people that did not rise to the level of an indictment, but probably were involved with behavior they knew that was illegal. So we'll see what happens on that if Mr. Berlew writes another story. The last thing I wanted to get to is this curious case of Rebecca Jones. And for those who don't know who she is the, quote, data scientist that has become a whistleblower who resigned or was fired from the state. She was responsible in part in putting together the Department of Health dashboard. But she quit or was fired because she was leaking information or criticizing how the dashboard was being presented, with some conspiracy theories on on the information, that it was being hidden, that it was being delayed, and to the point that she became a real media hero. But her the luster on her star started to lose its shine a couple months ago through some of her actions. She was arrested for breaking into, she probably had the passwords, but I don't know if it would be a breaking and entering, but unauthorized use of some state accounts. And then some other state officials who actually, one was a Democrat, the head of the emergency management department here in the state of Florida, basically said all her information was disinformation. And so, you know, a number of people in the media adopted her as the anti-DeSantis through the COVID days, and they did ride that horse. She got up to 400,000 Twitter followers. Obviously, she was very influential in what she said, and people who followed her did a couple of GoFundMes, raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, under the name of being mistreated by the state of Florida. Well, as this all sort of came apart, so over the last week, a number of things happened. First, she got banned from Twitter. And so Governor DeSantis, who just passed a law trying to protect people and candidates, political people, from being banned because of what they say, sort of celebrated her being banned. And this was interpreted as him being a hypocrite. But, the point was, she was not banned for what she was saying. She was banned for allegedly purchasing followers on the Twitter platform, a practice which has been banned since well before the recent uptick in politically motivated speech censorship. And then, responding to this critique was Ms. Pushaw, who is the spokesperson for Governor DeSantis. She told the Florida Capital Star that Governor DeSantis supports every Floridian's right to free speech. Even conspiracy grifters like Rebecca Jones have First Amendment rights, and their rights must be protected. However, the censored speech argument does not apply to this case because Jones was suspended for posting left-wing conspiracy theories, COVID disinformation, or targeting, harassment, and defamation, although she did all that. Jones was suspended for spamming and platform manipulation. Now, so when you get past that, Rebecca Jones has another perspective on this, and she says this is not a big deal and she's going to be reinstated. We'll see about that. But in the meantime, it looks like she's going to go ahead and she's announced she's going to run for Congress. And this is news today, but she's going to run against Matt Gaetz in his district, which that's going to be interesting. And so, obviously, there's not a camera or a PR approach that Ms. Jones won't use to raise money to keep her name in the limelight. And so, this is the newest sort of turn in this. It'll be interesting now to see how the media, once you file paperwork and run for office, that does get you a little bit of a ticket to media coverage, because, you sort of legitimized the operation by saying you're going to run for office. And then, depending on if you're going to have debates, but they, a lot of people, obviously you want to cover a race fairly and equally. And so if she goes on with this and opens up a campaign account and start raising money, this is going to be, look, you're talking about a three-ring circus. This will be very interesting to see her approach. It will, provide her a platform to continue to talk about her issues. And then it will be interesting to see if Representative Gaetz, who's got his own issues at hand, decides to either engage and try to take advantage, if he sees any advantage in engaging with Ms. Jones. So we'll keep an eye on that. All right, when we get back, we're going to pivot back to the local scene. We'll go through the Leon County Commission agenda and the things that are interesting and will have an impact on you, Leon County residents. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
Anyway you want it, that's the way you need it. Anyway.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Hey, look, I made a mistake last segment, did not get to the Nikki Fried issue, which we'll do right now. Look, real quick, we talked about it last week. Taos Reports broke the story about Nikki Fried editing or amending her financial disclosure form just days ahead of her campaign. The story went viral, got a lot of traction. Statewide media, a number of statewide media, even national media, Newsweek picked it up inside of Taos Reports, which we were gracious, or which we appreciate. It was gracious of them to do that. One outlet did not. So this story continued to get traction over the weekend. A lot of questions. There was an ethics complaint filed by a GOP operative, Evan Power. And so, you know, again, the amendment basically stated that she had did not know she's supposed to report $350,000 in income that she got from a marijuana company. She was a previously was a marijuana lobbyist. This is like the third time that she amended her forms back to 2018 and 2017. There's been issues around her forms, financial six disclosure forms, for years. The Capitalist has reported on that. Taos Reports has reported on that. So it's starting to get some traction. However, having said that, we wrote a story on Saturday that there is a host of Gannett papers around Florida. The Gannett owns, you know, the corporation that owns about 15 to 20 papers in Florida, and some of the major ones, the Palm Beach Post, Taos Democrat, Pensacola News Journal, Panama City News, Florida Times Union, Lakeland Ledger, Sarasota, Naples paper. They haven't covered this. And even this morning, we did a Google search, and the only people, you know, the people that have covered it initially with just talking about the amendments to her financial disclosure forms were the Miami Herald, Politico, Tampa Bay Times, FloridaPolitics.com, and obviously Taos Reports. And now the Taos Democrat did write a story on Saturday about it, but it was more in the, it was from the perspective that Republicans are taking advantage of it. And again, you've got this news organization, Gannett, which is trying to nationalize everything, and they're not covering this. So the question is this: is this because they've had shoestring budgets, they don't have editorial flexibility, or is it just plain out bias? Who knows, but I think you should be aware of this, and it's important to know that you've got to get your news from a lot of different sources. All right, and there'll be more on the Fried story in the coming days, if not Thursday, so we'll get more on that. Let's pivot to the Leon County Commission, which meets at 3 o'clock today. We've talked about some of these issues, got a couple of things to add. So there's going to be some, there's a couple of items on some transportation improvements, Meridian Road and Proctor Road. On Meridian Road is a result of a tragic crash there that killed two child students. Brian Welch, who is the county commissioner out there, requested the staff take a look at some of the issues there, and they did an analysis of the section of the road where the accident occurred, and they found there's been a number of crashes in that section. It's an S curve on Meridian Road between Gardner Road and Summerbrook Drive, so they're going to try to make some changes there. They're more, you know, put up some chevron signs, put up some more reflectors. Now, look, this road was designed back in a time when you would never design a road like this now. There's trees right off the edge of a two-lane road. And so they're trying to do the best they can with trying to make this a safer transportation corridor. So that's going to be on the agenda. And also Proctor Road, which is an unpaved road. There's been some issues there about trying to get it paved. Instead of doing that, they're going to, from what I've been told, they're going to stage some materials there so that when it does rain and the unpaved road becomes an issue, they'll be able to deal with it quicker. You know, paving that road, evidently, for the limited number of people that live on it, is very expensive. And so those are the two issues they're going to deal with at the county commission meeting. The Children's Services Council is on the agenda. As you know, that was passed overwhelmingly through a referendum here. That's going to allow a new property tax that could generate up to anywhere from $7 to $8 million to be spent on children's programs. However, they're having a little bit of an issue of getting started, so they're looking for a $400,000 loan from the Leon County Commission that they will pay back when they start collecting the tax money. again, you know, I think people that are arguing over the money now, this is sort of a, you know, that's water under the bridge. There was an argument about should we really spend the money on children's services. That's been settled. This is more about trying to get the nuts and bolts in place to spend this money. You know, the focus now is what are we going to spend it on, and is there going to be transparency and accountability? So, you know, I think this loan is just, you know, part of what people voted for. You've got to fund this from a standpoint of administration. Now, this would be limited to operational expenses, the $400,000, and it would be paid back, I think, within a year, from what I understand. So, not that, you know, obviously we're reporting on this and we should be aware of it, but saying they shouldn't give them any money, I don't know. We voted for this. When I say we, I mean Leon County. So that's an issue that they'll deal with at the Leon County Commission meeting. Something else that we wrote on and is gotten a lot of traffic is the Leon County Commission is going to consider an ADL resolution against religious hate. You know, we added ignores Christianity into the title. The Anti-Defamation League is, they have this resolution, which is basically just a political statement condemning hate and extremism. And they've gone around the state and tried to get this approved, I think, by municipalities and county governments. They've had no luck with county governments based on what I'm reading. There's a couple of cities that have approved it. But if you dig into the resolution, you know, they first want to, they say that this is requesting the local government bodies to denounce the attack on the national capital on January 6, 2021 as an act of domestic terrorism and reaffirm their commitment to cultivating an inclusive community. And then in condemning this attack, the ADL cites a 2019 report, Murder and Extremism in the United States, which found that 90% of the extremism-related murders were linked to right-wing extremists, with the majority committed by white supremacists. So you can sort of see where this is headed, but if you look at the actual resolution, you know, they address this hatred against religion, but they identify a couple religions, Islam. They talk about anti-Semitism, and then they also talk about hate against special interest groups, like LGBT groups. But they don't mention, you know, hate or violence against police officers or against Christianity. There's been a number of attacks against Christian churches in the country over the last year that obviously don't make the news that other hate attacks make. So, I find this to be very one-sided, and I find it to be very political. It's going to be interesting to see how the Leon County Commission deals with this, if they just don't even make a comment on it and just vote it in as saying this is something that condemns hate and extremism. The other thing I'd be interested in knowing is exactly how this got on the agenda. I think normally you would have to have some request from a county commissioner to get it on the agenda. So maybe we can figure that out. But we'll keep an eye on that and let you know what happens on Thursday. Now, two other things wanted to get to real quick. There's an item where the commissioners will be ratifying some changes to the budget. And one of the items I think we're going to be interesting to look at is a minimum wage item. You know, over on the city side, they've had their budget workshop for the 2021-2022 budget. And they were going to move up from a minimum wage in the city from $12 to $13. And there was some debate, and they were among city commissioners, and they were staff was sent back and told to try to find out a way to get to $15 an hour. Well, now the county commission is voting, and within their budget was the move to get to $14 an hour. From what I understand, that increase is only going to cost an extra $50,000. But you know, I would not be surprised if there's going to be a move to change that to $15 an hour. Now, the cost to move to 15, I think, is going to be a little bit higher. Well, I shouldn't say a little bit. It could be anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million. So we will have to keep an eye on that issue, something that might get some discussion at the county commission meeting. And last but not least will be the final nail in the coffin of the mask mandate ordinance, which will be repealed by vote. And they had to notice this to get it repealed. And so that will be dealt with there. Now, we'll have a reporter watching the county commission meeting, and we'll try to publish a Leon County Commission meeting briefs, which will go over some things that normally aren't reported but might warrant your attention. Some comments that are made by elected officials. We've done this with the school board, and it's been pretty informative for our readers. So keep an eye out for that, and we'll keep you posted on that. All right, when we get back at our last segment, we'll talk about the COVID numbers and how the changes in the reporting is being dealt with at the state level and the local level. And we'll also give you a rundown of the new principal assignments in Leon County schools. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
Say money, money won't get you too far, get you too far.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way, and I recommend starting with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you and answer all your questions. Stop by today and get a free paint sample to start your new project. Give them a call at 385-6649, 385-6649. We appreciate the sponsorship of Epps Decorating Center. All right, I did not, and I don't know if we covered this, but I just wanted to let our listeners know, you know, there's been a protracted negotiations between the city of Tallahassee and the Big Bend PBA. So that is, they have reached an agreement, and we have a story up on that if you want the details on that. But the city approved a contract with the police union, and we'll have more on law enforcement and actually crime this Thursday. We're going to run some numbers, and we'll have some, obviously there's an issue with getting officers, and we'll talk some more about that. But I want to be sure and let you know, you know, I'm always amazed at the amount of these stories that get out there, but people just don't see them because they are so busy in their day-to-day life of working, and they're getting their news from one source, or they don't see it at the right time, so they miss the story because it goes through their feed. So anyway, we're here to try to keep you caught up on what's going on, and that is anyway an important negotiation. All right, now back to the COVID numbers. Governor DeSantis announced they would stop the daily updates on the COVID numbers. Instead, what they're doing, which I think is a good idea, we were doing this with Leon County, which was a weekly report. They're going to start a weekly report now for the state of Florida, and they published their first one, which covered the May 28th to June the 3rd. And what they do is they show the last 10 weeks of the number of cases and the new cases. And you know, so this last week ending 5/28, they were down to 12,000 new cases, which just basically a month ago in April, they were at 45,000 new cases. So it's been headed down from there. That was about April the 9th. And positivity is down to 3.6%. Back on April 9th, that was at a high of 8% in the new cases. So, and they're also showing some vaccination reports up to over 10 million being vaccinated as of 5/28. Now, those are state numbers. Now, if we go back and look here at Leon County, the way they're doing this is not a lot of data, but they're showing that, for example, with Leon County, that the past week, the new cases, and this is week over 7 days, was 52 cases, which is basically 7 cases a day. The positivity rate was 2.4%, which is, again, you know, really low. And then we had the last week, we had 1,380 people vaccinated. So total people vaccinated is 125,000. So anyway, this is going to be the new way of reporting it. And like I said previously, you know, this is maybe, they may do this for another year because the Department of Health does weekly reports on the flu. It's just that it doesn't get a lot of coverage in the media because, you know, people aren't dying from the flu per se. And so you know, we'll keep an eye on this and see exactly what happens in terms of how this gets reported. Now, I will tell you, you know, there was 35 deaths the previous week. That is, you know, that's just fallen tremendously, the number of deaths, which is, you know, basically five a day, which, again, any deaths are too many, but the numbers have just, you know, cratered in terms of COVID due to the vaccination. And so they've limited the way they're going to report it, and we'll keep you up to date on the weekly numbers. Now, wanted to pivot now to the Leon County School Board and an announcement they had yesterday. As you know, here on Above the Fold, Antalis Reports have been focusing a lot on Leon County schools. And, you know, our mission, Antalis Reports and this show, is to get you up to date and to keep you informed on what's going on with local issues. And that means, you know, that means looking at the city, the county, and the school board. Now, the school board they've got so much that they're covering. You're looking at 33,000 kids, you know, high schools, middle schools, elementary schools. And so we cover what's going on at the meetings. But as I've talked to you about before, you know, there's a lot more going on in the schools. They have such autonomy and they make a lot of decisions. And we've started to try to cover some of that, and we'll continue to do that. But one of the announcements that was made was the principal assignments. And again, what this noted was, you know, who was retiring, who was replaced. So I want to run through that here in our remaining moments. The only one high school change in leadership, I think there's five or six high schools total, and that's at the Leon High School, where Billy Epting will be transitioning to the district's office to become director of elementary schools. As the person who was ahead of that, Ms. Sue Krall, retires. And so the new principal at Leon will be Michael Bryant, who was recently served as a principal at Kate Sullivan Elementary for 5 years, and was previous to that was the assistant principal at Leon for 3.5 years. So he is a known at Leon High School. Now, there is no middle school changes that I can see, but there is 5 elementary school changes. Kate Sullivan Elementary will get Julie Lawson, will be the new principal after most recently serving as assistant principal at Nims Middle for the previous 2 years, and was assistant principal at Deer Lake Middle School for 3 years. So she will get a shot at being a principal. Appalachie Elementary School will get Tiffany Williams as a principal. She is heading there after 8 years serving as a principal at Sale High School. Mrs. Jennifer Ricardo will become the principal over at the Adult and Community Education Transitions and Adults with Disabilities, joining Miss Regina Browning. So there's a different, and we didn't have that one, but that was Miss Jennifer Ricardo will become a principal at the ACE program. Chairs Elementary School, Michael Holmes. Mr. Michael Holmes will become the new principal at Chairs Elementary. He is served as an assistant at Rickards High School for 2 years and was assistant principal at Cobb Middle for 8 years. And then you've got at John G. Riley Elementary School, we'll get Maurice Stokes, who was recently principal at James Shanks Middle School. I guess that would be in Gadsden County. So this is I was just getting ready to comment on that. Most of these were inside hires. Looks like that one will be becoming, or maybe this person was already here, but was recently a principal at James Shanks Middle School. And then Rudiger Elementary School will get Shannon Heyer. She will be taking over there for Miss Sally Stevens, who is retiring. And Shannon was most recent the assistant principal at Rudiger for the previous 3 years, and also assistant principal at Riley Elementary. So those are the new principals. Now, I'll tell you, this obviously is, you know, big news for people who have kids in these schools and wanting to know who their principal is going to be. And the reason for that is because the principals have so much autonomy and a lot of impact on what's going on at the schools. And so we'll keep you up to date if there's any other changes in terms of the administration. But we will have more stories coming out about what's going on at the specific schools. You know, very interested in focusing on, you know, how people are hired to interact with the young people in the sports and, you know, extracurricular activities. I mean, you take Childs High School, they've got 27 sports. So you've got to hire people, and they have an impact on young people. So we want to dig more into who those people are and how they're hired and what kind of accountability measures they have in place for people that, again, have a big impact on the behavior and, you know, the future growth of the young people in our community. All right, well, that's it for today. Appreciate you tuning in. We'll have an update on Thursday from the Leon County Commission, the votes, and some tidbits on maybe what commissioners said or what their priorities are. So be sure and tune in then. But until then, have a great afternoon. Thanks for tuning in.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.